The Koi Gig Pod.
Yeah, I think what Athlone have done is now, as well as being a brilliant team, like the best team always wins the league. I'm a firm believer in that. But they're kind of like the blueprint of how to grow a team. I mean,
subscribe to the Koi Gig Pod on the Off the Ball app now.
The Football Pod Club on Off the Ball in partnership with AIB, proud sponsors of the GAA Senior Football, Ladies Football, Hurling and Camogie All-Ireland Club Championships. Check out hashtag the toughest for more.
Hello there, and you're very welcome along to the Football Pod Club. I have got James O'Donoghue and Paddy Andrews with me, as always. But we've also got two very special guests in Aidan Forker and Conor Turbitt, two All-Ireland winners with Armagh. Lads, we're in the Carrickdale Hotel. You came here tonight that you won the All-Ireland. What do you remember about that, Conor?
That was quiet.
Yeah, no, it wasn't too bad that night. It was the morning after. I struggled.
Really?
Yeah.
You had a missed call early in the morning, had you?
Missed call, yeah. Big Marty Morris. Yeah, I need to apologise to Marty for that missed call. But
missed the bus?
I missed the bus to the homecoming, yeah.
Well, that's all right.
It was, you know what? Whenever you win the All-Ireland that night, you're not in the mood for turning down drinks. And there was a cocktail in my stomach that, I played up the next morning. And, you know, it's bad whenever you have to ring the doctor to come down or come up.
Food poisoning.
Come up. Not food, but drink. Alcohol poisoning.
It was dodgy.
Alcohol poisoning.
Food poisoning.
Yeah,
you probably had to be in your best behaviour because I know you were on stage that night. But yeah. Do you remember McCaffrey in the back of one of the All-Ireland winners? Yeah. That was a beaut.
Yeah.
You got to have a bit of fun at these things.
That's what it's about. That's
what you've just done.
For. That's what you do it for, yeah. So I'm glad to hear you were enjoying it.
I enjoyed it.
Did you? Like
exactly.
Yeah.
That's the main thing.
Did you make any of the homecoming?
By the time I got there, the boys were off the stage. So you'll not see if you go and check the videos. I'll not be featuring in any videos. But no, I got there and then had a good night. Went to Basel Shields that night. So while the boys were fading towards the end, I had a good sleep in this. So I was still going.
That was tactical. You probably needed a bit of that. What were those days like for you? Because you're captain. So there's probably... And you're a leader, you're one of the older boys. Turbo can get away with that. But did you have to be on your best behaviour?
Like they didn't really need to nudge me, but they were just saying, okay, you'll have to be say a few words at certain points. So happy to take the hit and let these boys enjoy themselves that night. But listen, I it was like it's nearly like your wedding day, not to compare it to the same thing, but like you're just on a high. And, you know, there's wee fleeting moments that I wanted to remember. I didn't want to not remember stuff. You know, just moments maybe you're able to glance up at the cup or, you know, catch the boys on a different table and just enjoying it. And because when you get a wee bit older, it means probably a little bit more. But no, it was a good few days, I suppose. It was a good night here. Very well looked after here in the hotel.
Yeah, no, I can imagine. One of my favourite photos of you is the one with the shades. Was that the day of the five in a row? You did not take the shades off throughout those celebrations.
There wasn't much going on behind the shades now at that stage. I missed a couple of homecomings as well. So that's common enough. There's always a few lads who get caught out.
How did you miss them when you were in Dublin?
There was a lot going on in Dublin. Like, they were being dragged to different places. But no, genuinely it is. It's an incredible, we're all fortunate enough to have gone through it. You know, and that's what you do it for. Mm. That's what you do it for. And I agree with Aidan, what you were saying. They found the nights at the banquets were probably, it's a bit manic. There's so many people there. It means so much to the Armagh supporters when you were on with Kerry, the same with us in Dublin. I always found nearly a couple of days after, when it's just you and the team again and things have calmed down a bit, were special. Or even just the dressing room straight after the match, when it's before you go into the madness.
We had a night that night in Mahari, where you go to the captain's club on the Tuesday. That was some of we stayed there, and the Plenty in the Tank, Geez Dance for Geezer, were playing. I'm not sure if that was...
I can't get that song out of my head.
I swear you're safe on the way in.
I cannot get that song. It is the catchiest tune of all time.
That's Mahari's claim to fame. That was the first live gig of Geez for Geezer.
Brilliant.
In Ireland, but... Yeah, that was a good night, like the homecoming, it was just a wave of people everywhere you went, even the Carrickdale here outside before we went into the banquet, you know, and you were just ushered from one thing to the next, and it was just trying to, you know, have conversations with the boys in between times and chat and, you know, but yeah, like you said, like there's just wee lulls where you just have a drink with one of your mates who was there beside you, and what do you think of the match, and trying to reminisce, and can't remember too much of the match. There's a couple of bits of the match that I maybe remember, but it was just just all a blink, but it was the feeling that you had, and you don't remember loads of the memories, but you remember the feeling that you had, and that's the most important thing.
We talked a little bit about Armagh, because like in Kerry you have history and tradition and all the other Irelands you've won, and in Dublin the exact same thing, especially recently, but you're just the second group to ever do it in Armagh. Like, so what does it mean to Armagh to actually do this? Like, because the scenes, the celebrations were extraordinary.
Say for myself, like, my earliest memories of football wouldn't include 2002. I can't remember a thing of 2002. So my dad is a Tyrone man. One of the first earliest memories of Armagh would have been, well, the 2004, I think, the Fermanagh game. And then 2005, Peter Canavan scoring that free kick. He would have been dad, remember, in the diving end, bouncing up and down, and he's crying the eyes out. So,
that's ruthless.
Sort of for me, like, I don't know what he sort of feels, obviously, but for me it nearly feels like the first time, because it's the first time I've seen it and seen the Armagh fans like that and seen the emotion and the noise. It was like, as I said, it just feels like nearly the first time.
Yeah,
well, I do remember 2002. I was, 10 at the time, so...
Good age.
I remember scrambling to get a late ticket, I think, and actually the week of the final, people calling to the house or calling to your parents' house or whatever, so... a few of my cousins managed to track down a couple of photos of me in the pub maybe before the match end. This was the All-Ireland final day. There's Aidan sitting or whatever. So I couldn't recall any of this because they said, we took you down and stuff like that. But again, it's the feelings. You don't remember all the wee ins and outs of where you went to and what you did. But I remember that feeling at the end. I remember being beside my dad. I remember being beside my dad's shoulders, on my dad's shoulders. I remember getting lost for like 30 seconds of madness on the pitch because everyone was scrambling onto the pitch. But I just remember, just idolising the players and just like, obviously, to have lived through it now, it's different now because of the social media and all that things. I'm really glad that we did get on the pitch on our own and stuff like that. You could have shared it with, the teammates and getting round and seeing people. And, I really did make a point of trying to get round and seeing as many people's faces as you could just to take in the joy of it. So I don't think it'll really sink in. Of course, it's sunk in that you're an All-Ireland winner and you've won it. But, I don't think it'll really sink in as to the magnitude of, being the second team ever to have won it and to say that you're one of those people, obviously it's a great sense of pride for sure, and it's something that you've been chasing for a long time. So,
Like you're a teacher, so you're a vice principal, aren't you, in the school? And I know you brought Sam there a couple of weeks ago. Am I right?
Yeah, 2 Thursdays ago.
So you're looking at all the younger faces, seeing this and seeing Sam, and you're probably thinking, what impact can this have?
Yeah, well, I suppose I am at the cool face of it a wee bit, I don't think that, they don't see it as the same person, really. It's funny, especially the wee ones, there's Aidan Forker, and then there's Mr. Forker, who's the teacher, so it's a wee bit funny. But, the principal would even say to me the amount of our children who are starting to go to the games now and whatever, because... Tully's Horn is a mad place for football and camogie and sport. It's like in a lot of communities, everything revolves around the football club. So, you went back to your old school as in Mahari there the other day as well. And, just any of the coaches maybe that are taking Sam around to the schools have said, like, just the resurgence of sport and everyone's just... just on a high buzzing participation levels, and that can only be good for the county later on, I suppose.
The amount of kids now on PlayStation and on their phone and gaming and stuff like that, like any sort of interaction with Sam Maguire and footballers and superstars, say in their eyes, gets them out playing, it just drives it on completely.
It makes it real. Like,
it makes it more real. We need to kind of get it out there more and more and more, I think. Even I think GA could put players out there more. Like, just have these figures everywhere so people can look up to them, because like Sam Maguire is an Armagh now, Kerry aren't going to see it for a long time. Players just need to get out there more, I think, and kids hook onto it.
It's definitely like Sam Maguire Cup brings serious joy. Like it just brings serious joy. Like. Yeah. But like,
even
to be fair,
even a fake Sam Maguire Cup can bring serious joy as well.
I know it's costly, but I think. but yeah, no, like the children and even my own, like I maybe by P5, he's 8, like, and you know, he just the happiness that he totally gets it. He totally gets
it. He must be in around the team of it, is he?
He is surely, yeah.
The boys in the gym.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, would be.
Yeah. Get him on the power stuff.
He's
early.
An early. He's an early.
He's still on the squad.
Yeah, Leo likes getting to the gym and kicking. He sort of annoys people, to be honest with you. Probably kicking more than soccer. The boys are lifting weights, but he's.
Would he? He would be. We have Mbappe floating about, yeah. Project Mbappe.
Project Mbappe.
It's magic, though. Young lad at home now, he wasn't born when I was playing, like, but a couple of lads on our team would have had it as well. Like, and it's, geez, for the balance of raising young kids and then playing at that level is incredible. So how you do it, I'm struggling to keep upright half the time. But seeing them there, a lot of guys with our kids on the pitch and stuff and in the dressing room, it's magic, like.
Yeah, and I don't think he'll even get that part of it. Know how lucky he is to, do you know?
No, it's second nature, really.
Yeah, because he knows the boys well, and very personal with them, and the boys are great with him, and whatever. But I don't think he'll really appreciate that he's an old man. And he
goes, but for you, you must think, oh, that's my boy, like, and going up.
Yeah, no,
that's heavy, like.
Yeah, it's great. You know, like, even on like. At the time, obviously, you were at the top of the steps and he was sitting there beside you. And like that was lost to me at the time because I was so focused on trying to get my speech laid out and whatever. And where was it and whatever. But, you know, to be fair to Jarlath, he was thinking on his feet and he got Emer beside me. And Leo was on one of my favourite photos was just, you know, the smile on his face beside me when we were lifting the cup, you know. So that's one of my favourite photos. And listen, it's all very personal. Everyone has their own story. Mm. You know, that's mine, and I'm lucky, and I'm very proud of that, of course. And but everyone has their own story of. Everyone had their own story of 02, and everyone's going to now have their own story of 2024. So it's been good.
Yeah, you have a lot of different characters and personalities, same as any dressing room, I'm sure. But you know, we were kind of talking about it earlier. Like you must get on to stay together with some of the stuff that you went through, because we might get into a bit of it. Like we were talking about it on the pod on Monday. There's that shot of Kieran McGeaney after the fourth penalty shootout defeat, and he's nearly smirking, saying, nice. "Again, how?" So, but before we get into that, like you must be a tight knit.
Yeah,
back.
No, we are, and you know, I said this probably earlier on too that. You know, it's the culture that's been created in our group that boys want to stick together. Boys, we don't have players leaving the panel just because they feel like they don't want to do it anymore. Everybody wants to be. It's an environment where people want to be a part of. And I think this year, more than any other year, we've had boys who probably weren't in the starting 15 who just knew that they were a part of something that was bigger than themselves and just wanted to give everything to the team. But yeah, like you spend so much time with these boys that if you weren't getting on with them, it would be a tough place to be. But yeah. No, we do.
But doesn't it have to be so much more than a football team?
Yeah.
Like it has to be your family. Social life. It has to be your support group. Yeah. It has to be your buddies. You nearly need to not like a few fellas just to make it interesting. Like it has to be so much more.
You can't be best friends with everyone, surely.
You can't be. Like, you have to have your affections. But like. Yeah. I think it has to be so much, and that's where some managers actually fall down at times, is that it's all tactics and what we're going to do here. Like, you have to build almost a family, like, don't you? Not just a team.
We do, and even this year probably was the first year that we had a focus on doing things outside of, just outside of the team, and the training was like our social events every month. We had a number of different comedians and stuff come in, and we had...
Anyone stand out?
Go ahead. Who was it?
Yeah, but
Kieran Bartlett, wasn't it?
Kieran Bartlett and Mickey Bartlett were them in one time. They were a good crack now.
That's unreal.
There were a few ways.
That's
but it was just something different to gel over, you know. But to be fair, like we've even the personalities within the management team, like it just. I always need to think of it like a circle, like, you know, all the personalities in the management team complete a management team circle, and it's about our circle as well, and all them people add to the circle, do you know what I mean? And you need all them bringing all of themselves to it, I suppose, and because we've all been part of groups where, you know, people flick in and flick out, and you know, they turn up on the train and they go home. Do you know,
it's not enough.
That's not enough. No, you have to give all yourself, and those people, you know, weed themselves out over time anyway. So we're lucky. We have a group that love playing for Armagh and love bringing all of themselves every night. And like some nights, I'm not on it, so it's up to Paddy Burns, who's beside me, or on McKay, to say, right, what's wrong here? You know, so we have a really good group of challenge. Yes, we're challenging each other all the time. And if we're not doing it, the management team are certainly doing it. But also really a real belonging and support to something that we have. And, you know, it's enjoyable to be part of, for sure. And it's a testament to the people. Like, very few people walk away from our group. And I think that's a testament to what we have created. And it's a reluctance to step away, and it's very hard because, like you said, it requires friendships, buddies, everyone has their clique and all that there, but even our wives and girlfriends and all are very close and you know, socialise together and do that. So
it's massive, yeah, definitely.
But it has to be as well, lads. Like, it's very difficult that at that level, highest level, so little between the teams on the pitch. You see the games, extra time, winning by a point. We would have had it a lot against you guys as well, Jimmy, but like, it has to be the whole package. You just can't get away with it. You could be a brilliant coach, but you're a bit of a shithead. Mm. And that's not going to connect with the players, and we would have been big on it as well, that connection and creating that environment. It wasn't something we were always good at, particularly in our early days, but we would have put a big focus on it. But definitely it's...
And it's a journey. Like, it's not going to happen in a year.
It has to be a journey.
Like you were saying earlier about Keener and coming in at the start and the difference and whatever, like, you know, a lot of managements or a lot of coaches maybe are looking to come in and make an impact straight away and get results, whereas it takes time to build that and build that environment that, you know, creates a winning environment over time.
Do you see a difference from him 10 years, like, he's the longest serving inter-county manager now, from when he'd been at the start of that period? And I would have played against a lot of his teams with Kildare before that. Do you see a difference from him, his evolution as a manager and change in his communication, or does he kind of, like a lot of managers, freshen things up with their backroom team, maybe bringing in those different personalities that complement what our projection of Geezer might be, a really serious but attention to detail, that sort of things? Has there been much of a change over that period?
Yeah, I think if a good coach, you know, would evolve and get better. Like, I don't, and Kieran is a much better coach than he was at the start, and he was a brilliant coach at the start. But I think his own values have stood through the whole way through. Mm. Like, you know, he values honesty, he values commitment, he values loyalty to the jersey. And but he also has serious standards and you know, preaching about the importance of training and hard work, like, and that's been his core message all the time. And his whole North Star the whole time has been going out to get lost in the group and make the man beside you look good. And, you know, he's been preaching that from the very, very start. And I think this year it just came to fruition totally with the squad we have. And do you know, like, we probably keep him going saying, why didn't you tell us this earlier, you know what I mean? But, you know, he's been telling you for years, you know, he just hadn't lived it, I suppose. But no, I think this year it just came to fruition. Just timing, everything was just perfect, and everyone just truly lived it. You know, you're thinking of players who maybe never made 26s, even boys from your own club, like, who came in this year, and like the humility with which they went about their business, you know, like, this is their first year, and you know, Daniel McGee and stuff like that, and like anything asked of them, they did it. Yeah. And they realised that this has an impact as much as Blaine Hughes' impact or Aaron McKay's impact or Rain O'Neill's impact. I have to do this as much as anyone, because it's easy for boys to say, sure, I'm not going to play, I'm not going to have an impact, but
it's hard to create
it all. It all adds to it, you know, the proof's in the pudding now. So
Who takes your sessions on? Because you say Geezer's a very good coach. Would he actually put on the boots and coach you on the field, or is he kind of taking a step back? Or is Danny doing a bit of coaching with you? Or who actually takes your sessions and stuff?
I think, to be honest with you, that's Kieran's biggest strength. Like, his biggest strength is his leadership, coaching, but is his coaching. Yeah. You know, the way he thinks about the game, if you come to him with something, he's already thought about it, and he's thought about it like two or three layers deeper than what you've thought about it. And you're like, you know,
I shouldn't have said that.
Yeah, exactly. But not in that sense. He welcomes it because he knows you're trying to think and you're trying to evolve and get better, and he appreciates that. And he will give you three or four, you know, spin-offs off that. And I think that comes from his jiu-jitsu, because it's for every, you know, move, there's a counter move, and there's a so that's the way he thinks. And for every opening, there's a there's an opening somewhere else, or there's like three spins off it. So I think he's been heavily influenced by the way, you know, his whole jiu-jitsu journey as well. But I think that's one of his biggest strengths. But yeah, different parts of the sessions, like everyone has their input. Like,
he's probably taken a step back a wee bit in terms of, we now have, like, for us, our management group as a whole, where the whole lot of them are just unbelievable. Like, and you know, Geezer now probably has the liberty to take a step back and let Conleth Gilligan or let Donaghy or let McKeever take an element of the training if it's skills based and that sort of thing. And then Geezer would probably oversee whenever it comes to sort of the 15 on 15 sort of stuff. Then
that's, do you still do 15 on 15s?
We would, yeah. And that's just the, the look of the squad that we have.
Yeah, the depth you had.
You can't beat 15 on 15.
B team were definitely beating you at times.
Once or twice, was it? Once or twice, but actually O'Neill wouldn't let it go. But no,
it's been hot and heavy now for sure. And but I, like I was just saying, I was guilted into reading Donaghy's book, and he was saying like all his All Irelands that he won, and you were there too. Like, he says, when the ABB was nip and tuck, when it was hot and heavy, you know you were humming. Like,
that was always the thing coming out of the Dublin teams, was that ABB was always just...
It's hectic now, yeah.
Yeah.
But that's where football is now. You have to play the game. Like, you know, people talk about maybe when we started out playing, it was pre-season running or whatever. It's all football from now on, and it's just match fit all the time. Like, you know,
we every single week, no matter what tactics we were preparing for or what we were trying to do or who we were going to be facing, fundamentally it was based around there's going to be at least 20 or 30 minutes 15 on 15. And that's the beauty of the best teams. You can't win the All-Ireland with 15 players. I think that's proven over the last 10-15 years. You have to have a squad, and you have to have players who are pissed off that they're not playing. You have to have players who really believe they're going to get that jersey, and when that environment is created, that's when you get those games. Like, and there'd be war, like blood in the streets. But that was it.
You can't fake that. Like, that has to be culture fostered naturally.
But the players have to be there as well, and it has to be an environment where they feel there's an opportunity to play. That if I go out and I perform on Thursday night and I'm marking the so-called A full forward or full back or whatever it be, I'm going to go to town on them. And if I do, I expect to be playing that. And that was, you can't fake that. The B team has to be good enough to do it. There's no point in saying they're going to do it and then you lose by 20 points in the fucking match. That's not much use. But at their best, it has to be that competition, because the more games the season now, there's so many games, it's such a tight period of time, and there's so little between. You need to have that impact off the bench. You need to have the squad.
It's like even though soccer coaches are always trying to have two good players in every position, and you know, so you're never weakened. And we knew if somebody got a knock, and we did, Kieran Mack and Conor Neill, two starters, for sure. And, you know, we never got weaker. Like, and, you know, even Blaine took a knock in the All-Ireland final.
In the warm-up.
In the warm-up.
There was worries about that. Were you aware of that?
I seen it, yeah. It was...
Was it a dead leg, was it?
Joe McElroy, I think.
Towards MCL. Played the whole game in the MCL. He's still in
it. I think if you watch it back, there's some of the kickouts and stuff that were... So the ones that he hit the right-hand side were coming up a wee bit short, and it was sort of, whenever you look back at it, you're sort of thinking...
He kicked a lot of them. That has to be... Left forward, if you're watching.
You're lucky they weren't more aggressive with the
lucky,
press.
God, we didn't figure it out. But it's not even that. Like, usually that would worry you, your starting goalkeeper. Yeah. But, like, Ethan was flying. Ethan was flying. So, like, I was saying to Star in the warm-up, I was going, is he all right? What do you think here? And he goes, there's part of me going, you know, if Ethan plays here, this will bring something completely different for them, you know, because we nearly had to put the reins on him the last couple of weeks, because we're like, you know,
that was the tough from outside.
Funny, we were nearly wondering, you know, what would they have up their sleeve?
But from the outside looking in, he was such an influence, particularly this new role of a goalkeeper. Yeah. He's one of the best for me at it. He's incredible. Yeah, brings such a threat to the opposition.
But Blaine was just,
what Blaine did for you this year?
Blaine was incredible. Yeah.
But having two great goalies, it's not great at times. So we saw it in other counties. it's like you need to be set on your goalie at all times, like, don't you? Like, if there's any, if there's a lot of pressure on the goalie, I think it can affect.
Shows how good Blaine was. That we assume when Rafferty's available again, he's going straight back in there, and that was a big call for the management to stick with him, and it paid off.
Ethan had a long road back, like, and he was struggling. Bad injury, got a couple of, but you know, the last couple of months, he would definitely say he was
ready to go.
He was flying like
it's,
he was.
It's the personality you have there as well. You are watching the Football Pod Club. It's brought to you with thanks to AIB, who are bringing us on the road a couple of times this winter. So Paddy and James will be following me around. We bring a couple of stories. Today we're in the Carrickdale and Armagh. AIB are proud sponsors of the football, ladies football, hurling and Camogie All-Ireland Club Championships. Check out hashtag the toughest for more. We will be talking club in a little bit. Conor Turbitt has a big game of Clonairn coming up, so we'll come back to that in a moment. I do want to talk to you though about, I suppose, the journey this year, just a bit more. Was there a day that it clicked in particular? And the reason I'm asking that question is, I was in Celtic Park for the Derry game, and there was something different about you, I thought, that day. I just thought there was an aggression, there was a physicality, there was a ruthlessness that was like, you boys haven't been rattled by what happened in the Ulster final, a fourth penalty shootout defeat. Like, you were stronger because of that.
Was that your first group game or second?
Second. I was asked that question, so with the psychologist, Hugh Campbell, works in the team, obviously, but he's a bit more than a psychologist. He's someone that you would go to if you have any sort of issues. But he sort of asked me that question about what do you think is the most important game, and I sort of went to that, the Galway game after that, because we'd sort of come out, it was after that Derry performance where, it clicked for us on that day. But, you know, we went out against Galway and we didn't play well in the first half. We came out in the second half, I think they went 3 or 4 points up. Yeah. And then we were against a big enough Breeze and we managed to get that one.
Kelly sort of kick it.
Yeah.
And who sort of kick it? Did you see it?
Got
and slipped it to Kelly.
Slipped it to Kelly, yeah. Yeah. So, no, but even like the impact, we've talked enough about the impact of the bench, Soup coming on, hit the winner in that game, but just to get that one, I thought that was a massive turning point, obviously, because it meant you were going into a quarter final, you were getting a team who was coming out of the prelim, and then you were avoiding, obviously, the Kerry, the Dubs coming through. So to go to where it clicked, I don't know, maybe
it
did.
I think we, like, Kieran. And Kieran would be a great leader in the group, like Kieran Mackin.
Kieran Mackin.
He done the knee the Wednesday or Thursday, maybe the Tuesday before the Derry game. And we went to Derry to get ready for the match, and he came, Kieran, just pure team guy, just
on
came on crutches, rehabbing away, like straight away. Icing himself 3-4 times, 5 times a day, like, and it was a case of like, and it wasn't a big rousing speech or anything. He just got around a few boys and he said, "I'd give anything to be out there today." Like, you know, just go at it, just because it could be taken away from you in a second. I think that clicked with a few of us because, like, we weren't expected probably to win too much. You know, we were going up to Derry, couple of knocks, couple of bangs, a few boys were carrying. Probably Knox, and we're just like, if we don't go at this 100%, we might be in trouble here. So
did you smell blood?
We did smell blood, obviously, when we got a couple of big turnovers. If you remember that game, they started well. They went, I think, 2 or 3-1 up, and then we got a couple of, and like, it's just moments. Like, all your season rests on moments. Like, you know, that could just go and win them, and kick outs or a big turnover, and then you go and smell blood and get your goal. And you know, we did talk about, you know, on a counter, if it's a 3v2 or a 3v3, you know, explore the goal opportunity. And that's where Conliff, so, you know, very effective there, like, because he'd be like, explore it for a while, you know, so.
Like, impacts McQuillan as a blood sub that day. I know he lasts for a while, but he gets that goal on the break, doesn't he? Like, you kind of had that in your back pocket with different players doing big things at different times.
I suppose that was a game that we, probably that one more than any, for whatever reason, we just said, if we get the goal chance, we're going to go for it. But yeah, McQuillan, Nick Ross is somebody who comes on and brings insane speed to a game. So whenever that opened up for him, there was nothing else on his mind that he was going to get that goal.
A goal is actually nearly worth more than 3 points as well, isn't it? It's so stupid.
Next year,
But like, especially in a game where maybe the crowd's against you, it just quietens them a bit. Do you know? It's like, and it gives you such a lift. It's way better to go for the goal on average, I reckon, than fist a pint.
You'd have a good time in our team debating that one.
Really?
Well, yeah, you would.
Well, he says
Donaghy's converted now. Like, Donaghy's take your point.
It does. It depends. The point you fisted against Kerry was obviously the right decision.
Yeah.
But like,
if the game is, I mean, it's very situational.
It is.
But if the game is who's on the ball, like if it's Turbo, like you fancy yourself.
Did you need to be convinced about that, or were you doing that the right thing in the right moment?
There's a couple of times in training I've gone for it in that moment. I knew at the stage of the game that just where I was in the game there, but I needed to going up the pitch. A bar at the back post, I said to him after the game, if you're wearing a number lower than six, you're not getting the ball. You're not getting that ball. But
how did you have it in the legs that time to run that
break
fast?
I was taken off.
Yeah, after, but still to come back, even coming back on after cooling down, he's nearly harder on the legs.
It was, and even I came off and I felt as if I had a bit of a niggle in the hamstring. And then Geezer, whenever he said you might be coming back on, and he said, are you fit for it? And he's, no doubt. Like, but in my head, I was thinking,
do you get training to come back up?
Two.
Won the first, I think.
No, but it was the first sort of couple of strides, I was sort of thinking hamstring. But once that released, it was, I let go of me.
Who gave me the ball over the top? Was it Rain?
Yeah.
It was a fair long run.
But it was like from the outside looking in, two kind of standout moments from my view on your season was that Derry game at Celtic Park, because it was after, not straight after, but the Ulster final. I think everyone in the country was looking at that going, you know, penalties are a bit like Marmite. You know, some people loved them, they're entertaining. Different for you guys have been at the forefront of four of them, and it was another heartbreaking defeat. And you're thinking, where are they going to come back here? Because your season can very much go off a cliff there, and it's just like, that's too much. We're not going to have the energy to regroup. And you went up to Derry, you absolutely blew them away. And that was like, from the outside going, these have got a chance for the whole thing. And then the extra time in the Kerry match. Like, I know you were saying, tongue in cheek earlier, Jimmy, you blew them away. Like, and to do that to Kerry at that stage, All-Ireland semi-final and Croker, again, it was another, this is a serious, serious operation. So those two moments, it felt like, you might be able to elaborate on it more. There was confidence, you were freer, there was just a belief. You said you just get into a moment as a team. That looked like your two absolute peaks. Was there anything, were you aware of it, or did it just happen?
I think, like, there's probably moments for me where after the Ulster final, there was no real chat about the penalties at all, you know, because they're a lottery, really. And
But this is just the fourth time. How do you have the fortitude to get through that? Like, I've heard now there's one or two boys that thought this has to be for some.
Yeah, well, like, I would be a believer. I was a believer that there was something big, there was something special for this group. I always believed it because I knew the connection we had. I knew the work we were doing. I knew, you hear wee murmurs of other teams training and what they're doing. And as if they're not doing what we're doing, you know? And I'm saying, and I'd be a firm believer is you get out of it what you put in, over time, and I just knew that there was something bigger, and these conversations were always happening saying we can do it, we're close, So it wasn't a case of being completely demoralised with what are we doing, we're not getting any feedback around, we're so far away, like we knew it was but we went after moments in the game where we could have got better, where we could have nipped the game in normal time or in extra time, as opposed to. And I just remember the intensity of the coaches after the Ulster final. I remember all of them, really, but I just remember Starr. I don't know why they said these words, but I just got this from his body language or his words saying, this isn't happening to us again. We're not going to put ourselves in that position to lose the game. And, they just left no stone unturned in terms of our preparation for all the rest of the games. Not that the preparation before that was any different, really, but there was a steeliness in that, like, do you understand? Like, do you understand? Like, do you know, we're not moving on until you get that this was the right or wrong decision, or what would you do the next time? Do you know? So, yes, attention to detail, but you really knew your detail then, and it was like, and we all got that and we all bought into that and we all realised, we're not going to let this happen again, and this is how close we are. We just need to make one or two better decisions to get over the line of those big games.
If you look, if I remember looking at that game closely, was at it, you're in a really good position against Donegal. I think you're four up going into the last quarter. I don't think you scored for the last 14 or 15 minutes. And there was opportunities, you're up, getting the ball up the pitch, and I know Kieran would have been frustrated with this questionable level. And are you taking a sitting back, or are you trying to play conservatively? I don't think he's were. I just think that the clinical edge was probably lacking at the most important time in that game. And that's when I seen, or it must have been 3 weeks later, was the Derry match. And it was like ruthless. Pure, like the goals was one thing. The way Derry played, it opened up for that. But you guys absolutely took advantage of it. I don't think you ever looked back from that. Same with the game against the Rossies. Same when it was on the line against Kerry. That you just seemed to be a bit sharper up front, being really ruthless. Was that a conversation, or again, was that maybe one of the elements? I know there's lots that go into those type of performances.
Yeah, I think there's wee tweaks, like I said before, like moments. It's moments of, like, you know, making sure the ball does go over the bar, making sure you do give that last pass to the better position, or making sure you just don't take that risk with a kick pass out, or, you know, small things, you know, get you on the right side of the result. To, like, that whole narrative of, oh no, I can't get over big games, it's a mentality thing and all. You know, when you just whittle it down, it was two or three key moments of just making the better, making a wee bit better decision, going a wee bit harder to it, whatever it was. So, like, we weren't really bad into that whole narrative that was ongoing about us, you know, and we knew we were close, we knew we were mixing it with the big teams. It was just about getting over, and you know how hard it is to get over big games all the time, and we were lucky. Like, Kerry was tight, even the quarter final was tight. Final was obviously very, very lip and talk.
Joe McElroy makes that block late on. You know, you need these little moments as well.
But that's it. Like, and you said about Donegal, certain moments in that game, you had a mark. They're coming down to the finest sometimes moments. And then Kerry, we got a bit of luck. There was that score or shot that was taken on the post in the last kick of the game before that point that it went up. That goes over the bar. Then it's a different story. Armagh, we're going probably back to penalties at that stage.
And but if you look at the scores in the Ulster final, it's very... The scores that we got in the Ulster final were so similar to the scores we got in the final. Like, Connolly got one where he skipped inside and fisted over the bar. He also got one where he ran on the outside if someone cut inside. He scored that in the Ulster final and in the All-Ireland final. Those were two exact same scores. Ben got one on the right-hand side over the bar. My score that I got was very similar to the...
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah.
So, like our whole... like where you find yourself on the pitch, or our whole
how you play
narrative, I suppose, was very, very similar. We just didn't get over the line, and then suddenly there's a whole load of things wrong, whereas you make a few tweaks and it comes
so
good.
Like, it's so tight at that level between them, and particularly with you guys winning. Like, there's probably six or seven teams looking going into the 2025 season going, there's so little between these teams. It's there for so many people, and the margins are so fine. We would have spoken chat with Kevin McStay on Mayo side, leading an injury time against Galway in the Connacht final, leading an injury time against Dublin in the qualifiers, leading an injury time against Derry, and ultimately they lose those games. And that's their season. Completely different narrative. And you guys were in that situation with four penalty shooters, where it's one decision is different and you're in All-Ireland semi-finals. You've a number of Ulster titles. It's so, so fine.
You have the benefit of, I suppose, maybe being that bit older and family and the experiences you've gone through before.
That's right. A young buck here beside you. Like,
did you struggle with that aspect of things, like the shootouts and believing that, I don't know, having that mental fortitude to come through these things? Because they are knocks.
Yeah, no, probably.
Because you would have scored one, you would have missed one in another shootout.
Yeah, I missed one against Galway.
The first one.
Yeah, but after the fourth, I remember after the penalty save, Sean Patton saved that. I remember just thinking, like, I am far too used to this feeling of getting beat and in the penalty shootouts. Like, so there was times that probably after that Monaghan game, I was probably thinking, like, I don't know if I can put myself through this again. How am I going to get myself back up and ready for a pre-season? Because whenever it takes you a while mentally to come back from something like that, but we're lucky that we have such a group that... A couple of bit of time goes by, you sort of get the energy back in, and you start to think, right, I'm ready to go again. And thankfully, with the boys, the management that we have, the leadership group, and everybody else in around in the back of that, you know, you further get yourself back up, and it doesn't take long before you're ready to go again.
But that was going to be my question, Tom. Say,
sorry, James.
Does Geezer come in and have to rally the troops, or is it a case of you've discussed it yourselves and we're parking it? Do you know what I mean? Like, because when we were kind of discussing it in the pod, it was always a case of how does he go into the lads who are going to be heartbroken and pick them up again after a fourth time? Do you know, like, was it a case of him having to go in and pick you up, or were you, did you sort yourselves as players and just carry on?
I don't think we met probably until the first meeting of, right, we're getting ready for a pre-season. But Geezer and the rest of the boys always, they would have a good way about them, knowing who the person is individually and knowing what they need. So there's been a couple of times where I've gone into the pre-season, gone into the gym, and there's been a harsh conversation. Sometimes there's been a better conversation, but I'd say, like, for each one individually, there's...
We've all been there.
I know.
There's actually different baby weights as well.
I get a hard time for missing pre-season, so that was sort of like a focus for you coming into the next year. But I think it is just individually, they have a good way about them to... Yeah. This is what you need to work on, and yeah.
Okay.
But after lots of friends, you have to get yourself picked up that little bit... Does the turnaround help?
Exactly.
You can't waste the time.
Yeah. No, you can't waste the time. And like the conversations are ongoing, you know, on the bus, going right.
Excellent.
What way are we gonna frame this here? You know, and Kieran has a very, very good way with words around just reframing. Like, you know, what's wrong with you? Like, our competition's done. We're in a different competition now. You know,
but that takes an unbelievable mindset to come back from that.
You clearly had it. Like.
You clearly had it. Yeah. Say, even when you went to extra time against Kerry. Was penalties lingering somewhere in your mind? Were you thinking, we need to win this in extra time?
He probably. Probably, yeah.
I'm never on the pitch at this stage. So.
Yeah, you're... I don't think so. Not at that point.
You didn't
Because we were three up. We were three up, so it nearly all happened so fast. They got the two sort of quick fire scores. Yeah. No, not really.
Because mentally, like taking a penalty in normal time, is so easy compared to taking a penalty in a shootout, because you have so long to think about it. Like, you're probably thinking about it at the very end of extra time, those few minutes.
Yeah.
Then you're queuing up, then they're tossing, and you're still thinking about it. Am I going that way or that way? Like, it's
the penalty that I missed then against Galway. Like, you're saying the time that you have to think about it. I remember watching Gleeson dove to his right, I think, for his first two penalties. So in my
head,
it just changed my mind. Yeah, and I went right.
That's dangerous.
It's what happened.
And there's so much fatigue in the legs, like in general,
and in your mind, even the mind fatigue.
Mentally, yeah.
But then there's the cruelty of making the same five take them again. Like, I was at the Clare Hurling semi final, and they're a different story in hurling, I think, even penalties. But like, when it comes back around again after the initial five. And the same boys have to go again. I want to turn to Connor on this first, but just for context, like, you've played as a deep line wing forward, a free roaming wing back, a target man full forward. You played as a man marking corner back. I'm not sure how many friends you've made in that regard. For you breaking through, like, 6 minutes into your debut at Armagh, your league debut, you had 3 points on the board, you end the day with 1-6 from play.
Yeah.
You had that kind of the hot shot coming through, breaking in, the next big thing. Like, that happened really quickly for you.
Mm.
But it wasn't really straightforward either, was it?
No, it wasn't. As I said...
You were 20 then,
weren't you? I was 20, yeah. So the first year that I was asked in, I actually turned it down, but that was because I was up in Belfast and stuff, living that university life. I then came in and... I was working.
Jimmy Hare and then set in the turbo.
So I did a placement year and I came in and I got a good, obviously, pre-season behind me. And then had a bit of a whirlwind start where nobody really knows who you are. You come in and you hit a good few scores. And all of a sudden, people watch, there's a bit of tape on you, there's a bit of video, and they can do a bit of analysis and they know more about you. So it probably took a bit of time. I sort of went in the next couple of years and... You know, I probably lost my spot, and I was more expected to come on and have that role that many of us have been expected to play, where you're coming off the bench and having that impact. So I found myself at a stage where I was in and out of the team. And then thankfully this year, I've been able to hold down a spot. I think everything that you do in football, everything you do in sport is helping you grow. And those defeats that we've taken, I said earlier about, you know, I'm too used to this feeling, but you're nearly getting to the point where, right, you can not move on quicker, but you probably know better about how to deal with it and how to progress, right? This is what I need to do. in the next coming days, weeks, months in order to get himself back to where I need to be.
I think like it would have been nice to win the Ulster last year, of course, but nice, I'm not sure if we had won the All-Ireland, if we had won the Ulster. Just with it, just the ferocity of the coach, not ferocity, but intensity of how the coaches just went after all those wee moments again. Like I said, there was a real steeliness to our preparation after that. Like, not that there wasn't before, but it just irked you a wee bit more. It was just like, what point is this going to be the straw that breaks the back, you know?
You learn a lot more from a close defeat like that as well, don't you?
100%.
There was that element of getting over the quarterfinal. Like, you wouldn't believe the amount of work that went in sort of that quarterfinal stage, semi-final stage, final stage, the amount of work that has to go in and did go in for us in terms of walkthroughs and players understanding where they're supposed to be, knowing the rules. And that, every time we got over that quarterfinal, like, it stood to us massively, I thought. And it's just that understanding and knowing exactly what we expect from each other was just...
I know you've spent a lot of the last 12 years chasing inches and little things and reading up on stuff, or I suppose growth mindset is the kind of catch-all phrase for it. But when McGeaney first joined you in 14, I read during the week in a piece you did with Brendan Crossan that you're about 21, 22 and you hadn't met him before, and you said, can I meet you for a coffee? Was that when you first came in under Grimley? Is that...
Yeah.
You kind of went to McGeaney. You were drawn to him. Like, is it fair to say that he embodies a bit of McGeaney on the field?
Mini geezer, yeah. Did you watch that? There's a video Aidan Nugent does.
No.
The day after in the character. No. There's a video describing... What's he say? Do you not seen it? No.
I'm on the money, so...
A mini geezer, anyway.
I'm on the money, so... But there is a bit of that. Like, he... You went after something there with him.
I'm just fortunate that he came into my life at a point where I was really a sponge for trying to get better, you know. And I'm not saying I'm not that now, but like, going back to him earlier about, you know, you get a wee knock when you get dropped or whatever, but I think when you hit 26, 27, 28, you know what you're about. You're, you know, if you have a poor game, it doesn't hit you as hard because you know what you bring usually. But, you know, Kieran on his levels and his standards and his approach, like, came in at that time where I was, you know, really probably yearning for that, really, and obviously plucked up the courage because, you know, he was Geezer, he was Kieran, he was the All-Ireland winning captain who you were looking at and watching and whatever, and now he was coming into your setup. So, I wasn't sure what I was going to say to him, but I never said too much in that first meeting. You know, he opened his book and he said, this is what I want and this is what I expect from a wing forward where I was playing at the time, and had all these points out, and this is what I expect from this, is why I want my teams to play, and this is what, you know, and it was just, it opened an absolute door for me going, I'm just showing up to training here, hoping I'm doing well, you know, and talking in vagaries, like, you know, just everything was very vague, and, you know, whereas he was a very, very clear vision of what he wanted and what he expected, and this is what you have to go after. And you know, as I said, the first few years of him being involved was him making us realise that we weren't really training at all. We weren't really, our approach wasn't even close, you know. So,
and some people probably can just turn up and train, and they'll be a part of it, like, but they probably don't need to go after it the way you did. But did you need to go after it the way you did? Like, you left that meeting and bought a notebook across the road.
I did, yeah. And I still all have all my notebooks from all those, like, of 20 or 30 notebooks from all the years. But
what are you writing?
Just whatever, like, just reflections, just thoughts, or just even like a journal thing, or as just my workouts, every session I've ever done, everything, I record everything. Sometimes I've been more diligent than other times, you know. Other times you're exploring other things where you were turning up and trying to go on feeling and not overthink it, not over intellectualize it. Other times I was very, very militant with how my preparation was and my pre-performance routines and all that there. So I've probably tried it all and got hopefully to a point where I know what works for me, I know what, because it has to serve you, you know. People think they do it because, you know, you're doing it or the top performers are doing it. You have to do something that serves you, or you have to take it back, and then it's changed because I've less time because I've two children at home. And, you know, you have to do what works and what suits you and what your sweet spot is, I suppose, a wee bit. So, but I enjoy all that. I enjoy exploring and enjoy figuring stuff out and trying things for 2 weeks or 3 weeks and see it doesn't have an impact on my sleep or my preparation or whatever. And do you know, so that's what I enjoy. Turbo gives me a hard time about it. Like,
I'm the opposite.
I was just thinking, you are
there's no way you did that.
Yeah, don't start. Did you have a mouthful?
No, I didn't.
But every team has different personalities. Like, every team at every level. You know, some guys are might be seen as more serious. Some guys are more laid back. Whatever works for you. And the biggest thing is that that environment is created. That's where I think the coaches, everyone talks about culture, they create an environment where everyone's allowed to thrive in that. And it's like, what works for Aiden, knock yourself out, do that, and that's encouraged. And what works for you, Turbo, whatever works for you.
But I think there's a basic level of requirement in terms of high performance sport, or elite level sport, which we are in terms of your approach. Like, you can't just come in not having thought about it and jumped in the queue and packed a bag and expect to go and get the best out of yourself in that session.
And there is, like, there's stuff that Aidan Falker does that I can learn from, and I'd say there's maybe a wee bit that he can maybe learn from me, but probably whenever I first came in, the sort of the preparation that I would have been doing would have been very minimal. But as the 5 years go on and as the more time you spend under someone like Kieran McGeaney, you do learn that minimal thing that Aidan Farber was talking about is like, you're not going to get away with it. There is a certain level of preparation that you need to be doing if you want to if you want to perform on the big days.
Yeah, well, it was some journey, boys. It was some story, and all those little bits of heartache and growth over the years, like, it's all bookended by the fact that you won Sam Maguire. And before we get into next year and defending it and new rules and all that, we're in the midst of the club season. I know Mary were beaten. Did you get to quarterfinal?
Quarterfinal.
You see, you were kind of end of September.
I've actually had a proper off season, like, because we were in the, like, we would have been in the mix for 10 years or more there, and like, this has been a proper off season for me, so I've enjoyed it. And
probably handy when you've got a couple of functions and a couple of things going on as well.
That helps.
Yeah, no, it's been good. Just spending time at home, and yes, obviously the calendar's a wee bit busier, and you're asked, which is lovely to be asked to go to certain events or go and see someone in hospital or something like that there. But I'm actually looking forward to getting back to doing a bit of training and getting back to the gym. So
that's good. That's interesting. You'll be actually playing in the Interprovincials this weekend, won't you? For Ulster. That'll be interesting. We'll be talking about that in the pod next week, and we'll be looking back and analysing your two-point efforts. The last clip I saw of you was a full-length diving block on Rian O'Neill as Clonair and Beck Cross. We've got an all-Lurgan Armagh Senior Football Championship final this weekend. You're playing the local rivals, Clannagale. Just for people who are probably going to be watching this now a couple of days on, we're not going to get into the meat and drink of the game itself, because you have a big game this weekend. But, like, what does that mean to Lurgan? Like, is that taking over the town? Is it, like, the colours, your colours, they're blue, aren't they? You're orange, like, is it?
Yeah. No, it's obviously massive for the town. The town has been on a high for the last number of months, just with the All-Ireland. We've been lucky enough, I think we had maybe 7 or 8 players from Lurgan in the squad there. So the town, there's a lot of energy already, and now it's been boosted by 2 teams that they're going to go head-to-head in a final. And they also have St. Paul's there, who are in an intermediate final. We had Clannagh had a seconds team who got to an intermediate semi-final. So, you know, there's a lot of good things going on in Lurgan. But, you know, this derby, it should have everything that's good about Derby Day, and mixed in with the fact that it's a championship final. So, it makes for a good game. Like, there's a lot of quality that's going to be on the pitch. There's going to be that sort of edge. So I'm expecting a good game.
Clannagale were beaten last year in the championship final, am I right?
Yeah.
And you won one in 21.
21, yeah.
And that was a big one for you. Like, and I suppose, James, you're a townie as well. You've got
Born and bred.
Killarney Legion, Dr. Croke's rivalry. Now, that's a little different at the minute. I got in trouble for complimenting Croke's recently. But
fawning over them, that was the problem.
Is that sort of rivalry there between Clannagale and Clannagale? Like, what way does it work? I know you're looking in from the outside here. Like, is it a... is one of them a big dog going into this weekend?
Well, I think you haven't really... well, you've played each other of late the last few years, but there wasn't always that, maybe with different divisions and stuff. But obviously the boys are close, and Soupy and all the boys travel together, and TK and Shane, and and all that there. So that'll be all cast aside. And Clans obviously have really dominated underage, really minors, under 16 championships, even maybe won an Ulster or something too. So, you know, they have a good young team who have serious quality, and so do Clonernic. You know, they're a big, two massive clubs with great traditions, and yeah, it'll be an interesting one now. I don't know who I want to win now, I'd say.
But it does, and Lurgan, although it's a decent sized town, it's that you're going up. I seen Soup there yesterday in the cafe. Like, you see these boys on a regular basis, so whoever comes out on top can give it a nudge, but
give it a nod, eh?
Like, you go up, there's definite bragging rights, and
of course there's, yeah,
there's the boys going into hiding for a week or more than a week, yeah, after this game. But you know, it's a good thing for the town, there's no doubt, and you know, I think everybody's just really looking forward to it.
Yeah, the one you won in 21 beating Cross, like, Cross McGinn have such a hold on the championship for so long. You came back, I think, late on that day. I think you got a couple of late points, but there was a couple of goals that you got off the bench that made a big difference. I think you were 7 or 8 down, were you, with 10 to go?
Which, in
21 final? Am I right with that?
We were, yeah, I think we were 5 or 6 down, I think. Yeah, and at that point, there were still the water breaks.
Yes, so it was 21, yeah.
It came, I think we were 5 down going into the last water break, which came at a good time, so we got to regroup, and then it was we were going for an all-out press, and the more we kept clipping scores, more momentum we got, but I think, I don't know how long, it was over 50 years from the last time we'd won.
Maori's a little different, pronounce it right, have I?
Mm-hmm.
16 was your big one. Was that the second time you ever won it?
First ever.
That was the first ever in 16. Like, that was, I know you mentioned 30 notebooks, I know you sat down and you wrote what it felt like because you want to remember it in 30 years' time. Can you remember what it felt like?
Yeah, I remember the final whistle. I remember that feeling, yeah. Like, if you'd have said to me, what is it, 10 years ago in 2014, that I'd have 2 senior championships for Mahari and an All-Ireland for Armagh, I'd certainly bit your hand off. So it was worth all the toil and all the effort, I suppose. Yeah, won our first ever in 2016.
Where were you playing that day?
In 16, I played full forward, yeah.
Full forward.
Yeah, and 2020, I was full forward as well.
You were full back. Were you in the full back line the All Ireland final, weren't you, really?
Yeah. No, so,
but kind of inverse of your career, isn't it?
If you
can hear the
backs.
Can you go from full back to full forward or vice versa? Like, the difference is incredible.
Absolutely shit. I couldn't do it.
I would not have a clue.
No, it's different gravy. Like.
But we played versus Common in 2017, and we literally were so light on the ground, like, that somebody got injured or whatever, and Geezer's like, you need to go back and mark one of the Martas or something. And I was going, oh,
God.
And I ended up winning the first two contests. I ended
you did
up winning
too well. That's why you're back there. That's what happened.
The worst thing I ever did was work on my tackling and throw you.
Yeah, do a crap job. They never asked to go back to where you were with the groups.
No, I was in forwards for the 2016 final. And it was amazing. Like, it was, my dad was beating 4 county finals.
Wow. Yeah.
And so
that's something you hear about growing up, yeah. Or does he not mention it, or is it that sore that he doesn't mention it?
No, he never talked about it, really. But you meet people and you go, your dad was a good player, your dad played this, or he played in this. Only found out later he was like the captain for the two of them before. And again, it was Cross and Clannagiel and all these teams who are, and like, you met us hurt, like, hit the inside of the post and it came out, so there's a whole chat about a curse and all this here, that whole chat. And the night before the 2016 final, some of us were at mass, and the priest actually said, like, it was a really surreal experience. The priest said, if there's any curse on Mahari, hereby say it's gone, or whatever he said, it was very formal language. Yeah. And like, in the middle of mass, Everyone started clapping in the middle of it. It was very surreal,
Wow.
But that
worked.
It worked. We won the next day, so it was good.
Who'd you beat that day?
Cully Hannah. And they were going for their first one ever as well. So it was nip and tuck. It was no love lost that day.
Well, best of luck this Sunday, and we might check in with you for another Monday club or something like that if you get over the line. So that's the Armagh Senior Football Championship final. There's loads of finals happening all around the country over the next couple of weeks, so we'll be covering on the Football Pod. Soccer was a big thing for you growing up, and I know we've kind of touched on this off air a little bit. I hadn't planned on doing this, but your Twitter bio, I'm just going to get it here because there's a big difference. First of all, yours is Clonairn, Chelsea.
Twitter?
Yeah, you've got a Twitter. You haven't Twitter tweeted since 2014, lad. So we leave you at that. But Clonairn and Chelsea, we'll come back to Chelsea in a minute. But for you, it's professional lace tire, educator, lifelong learner, Mahari Armagh. So the important bits there along the way were educator, lifelong learner. We've touched on those little bits and pieces. Is professional lace tire to do with the kids?
Yeah.
To do with the lads?
I must tie about 10 sets of laces every day. On the playground or in the morning, or will you tie your lace? I can't tie my lace, can you tie them for me? Or in the hall, or if you're out coaching, and you just, because I take our under eight, so first 5 minutes of the session, like, tie your laces or something like that. So yeah, that's professional, that's where professional lace tire comes from.
I wanted to ask about the Chelsea connection in a minute, but like, you actually were on trial in Liverpool at one stage, am I right? You played a lot with Dungannon Swifts.
Yeah, I played with the Swifts right up until I got the call for Armagh. That was my club that I played with, and I enjoyed the soccer. Like, football was soccer was my first sport really the way through. So, we were a decent side and got a few opportunities to go across the water. And
what age were you when you went over?
At 14, 14 or 15. It was me and another fella. With only two boys chosen from the north. There was maybe a handful of boys from the south. So we all went over and played together a trial game, played in their whole youth setup and stuff like that, spent a week over there. And
did you come across any, who'd have been there that time when you were 14 or 15?
Yeah, we went to watch the boys at Malwood. I think it was Malwood at that time training. And I got to meet Gerard Carragher, was there. It was in around that time they were in around the Champions League game. So like, Crouch was there at that time.
2006-ish, is it?
Yeah. I would have been in around that time, yeah, 2006. Like, everyone says that you were Liverpool. Like, I was over at a few clubs, but that was the big one because it was very memorable. I got to meet all the players. I still have a jersey at home where they all signed it and all for me, you know, because we went to watch them train.
That's unreal.
So, nothing came of it, so it was
but,
no good.
But did it feel, and I know it's soccer in terms of having a career there, you know, to even get to the level of Liverpool and break through the first team. It's, I know young Conor Bradley's doing it at the minute, but
class,
did it feel real at that time? Did it feel like this could be something that you'll chase and pursue?
Yeah, you know what? I got a bit of advice at the time. I was traveling over with one of the chief scouts of Liverpool in the north or whatever, and I don't blame him for this advice, but I feel like it was a poor piece of advice. He was like, you know, Aidan, you'll find now you'll get a lot of other calls from other clubs because you're at Liverpool, like one of the biggest clubs in England or whatever. And like, I maybe rested on my laurels a wee bit and you know, thought it was maybe, you know, going to definitely get calls from loads of different clubs, and that didn't really come and manifest. And I was 2 years down the line, maybe when I was 16, 17, and a few of my friends from my team actually had signed for other clubs, and there was it's weird at 16 you're thinking this isn't gonna happen for me when you're only 16, and that's what it's like when you're playing soccer, like, and if you don't get picked up early. But you know, ironically, the player from Dungannon, probably Conor Bradley now obviously, but because he played for Dungannon the whole way through as well, but the player who had probably the best career was Niall McGinn, who went and played 2 or 3 seasons with the Swiss first team, signed for Derry City, played 1 or 2 seasons there, then went across and signed, and then ended up having a great career for Celtic, Aberdeen and these clubs, so and still playing for a team in Scotland, you know. So, you know, there's no right or wrong way to, you know, to
those
go
paths. It's such a young, it's so difficult to make it at that age.
You're talking about so difficult.
Maturity and reaching your peak in GAA and going through maybe 4, 5, 10, 12 years before you're still learning. You're a baby at 15. 16. Mm. No, you haven't a clue, but you might think you know stuff. But
good formative experiences, of course. But listen, who's to say I was really that close?
Do you have a hidden soccer career?
No, I don't. No.
You might want to delete that Twitter account, by the way. Yeah. You still got Jose Mourinho sliding down the touchline as your cover photo.
No, I don't. Played a couple of years just where there's a team called Sunnyside.
Okay.
And then I moved to Lurgan Town. So I had a couple of years, but just more for the crack rather than anything else. But
yeah.
No, I wish I could have spent a bit more. I didn't get a trial in England from my time at them two clubs.
Yeah, but you step up in a penalty shootout. Where's Forker and all these bloody penalty shootouts? You never took one of them.
Penalties? No, I haven't. legs have gone that stage. My legs were gone at that stage. Got hooked, yeah.
And the Chelsea connection, did you just, obviously, it was Abramovich, and you were like,
didn't happen like that. My dad would tell the story how he was a Chelsea supporter. He beats the team in the 70s. I think we got to an FA Cup final, and he would have done a bit of Irish dancing. So I think he was 17, 18, and he left, or he skipped the Irish dancing class to go and watch Chelsea in the FA Cup final. And that was Peter Osgood, I think, and the boys. So from then, I think it was Chelsea from there. And just I was brought up. There's three boys plus my dad in the house, and we're all Chelsea.
And where are you? Are you youngest, oldest?
Second oldest, yeah. Yeah.
All Chelsea?
All blue.
Wow, right, okay.
I thought they were going to have a shocker of a season. Right. They'll actually be fine.
No, they'll be doing it for good.
Yeah.
Cole Palmer, we're all right.
He's unbelievable, but he does not have a thing going on.
No. But he's...
Although people are kind of playing on that a bit. It's kind of annoying me. They're trying to set him up now on, you know, getting him, giving these one-answer questions. He's getting a bit annoyed at it, I think.
Is he?
Yeah, I love that about him, though.
I sort of feel like the English media are going to do a bit of an injustice for him, because the hype that he's getting is going to be through the roof.
They're going to swipe the legs from under him at some stage.
I love that.
He does have that coolness, though. Would you have someone like that, that would, you know, in a Gaelic football sense, that would have that about him?
Hurricane Connors like that.
Herbert's a bit of that. No. Ice in the veins.
Not quite. I missed.
I think Rob
Finner. He's a proper striker. Like, you like finishing. Like, he can finish.
That's what I'm in the team for.
Would you celebrate?
I'm not in the team from attacking anyway. Put it like that.
Would you celebrate? Would you have a go-to celebration if you...
No, I wouldn't. I got a bit of stick actually from a celebration, especially after that Kerry score that I clipped it over the bar.
What,
I didn't know. I was just going metal. But no.
Back out for the kick.
I'm going to have to come out with something.
Yeah, you're going to have to wear
trade
them.
Trade me.
Don't. You don't have to. You don't have to do it.
No? Do you not know?
No, you don't have to do
that. So I'm going to have to having no celebrations ever after anything.
I know.
Goals, points, not allowed to celebrate.
You celebrate in private.
Actually, Dan, he's big into celebrations, isn't he?
Dan, he's big.
But it's more than a crowd. He just wants to gin up the crowd, soup. Took a lad from Donny. Donny would have been nudging him, make sure after you score.
Yeah, he was giving it large after every point. But the crowd reacted. No, a soupy was like.
Oh, right, yeah.
Every time he scored, like, he really gave it something. But the crowd reacted.
But he knew the crowd were reacting. Like, that's an important thing.
Yeah.
Like, that was an extra bounce, surely, energy-wise, like, that you were getting.
Yeah, I think definitely.
Soupy's a real fan favourite. Like,
right, come on. Like, the play in the final was incredible. The whole stadium's kind of waiting for him to come in.
Yeah.
Did you say anthem when he was coming off you?
No, I don't think so, no. No, we know what we expect from Soup. The crowd obviously loves him, so I think he feeds off it, and the crowd feeds off him. So
Soupy would be a nightmare coming on, like, you know.
Yeah. Just pace.
Because he wants the ball.
So direct. You know, that play straight down the sideline in for a goal. I always say players coming off the bat, if pace, particularly in attackers, just creates, there's more space, and it just creates havoc. Nobody you know was defending. The last thing you want to see, 55, 60 minutes on the clock, because we had it obviously... Kev Mack would have been a big one for us, just head down and just go at the goal. Like, it's so hard to stop. Like,
he's been around forever as well, isn't he?
Yeah.
What is he?
He's 33 now. I'm not sure how old Butcher is.
Yeah.
Young gun.
Still has the legs.
That role suits him. Mm. He may not agree with it.
Still want to play.
I'm sure he did start, like, he did start 5 year games this year. Like, so he wasn't just the super sub.
Yeah, he started also final, but he was, like, Soupy keeps himself really trim, and, you know, he trains hard, and he enjoys that stuff, and he's serious quality. But so there's always room for
Just that bench impact, like, even Charlie O'Byrne.
He ended up with a serious bench.
Just Charlie O'Byrne and that extra time against Kerry. You different lads at different moments.
Thanks.
McQuillan. You are listening and watching the Football Pod Club, and thanks very much to Aidan Forker and Conor Turber for joining myself, Paddy and James here in the Carrickdale, with thanks to AIB. We're nearly through it. You've been so good at your time. A couple of quick rapid fire questions, because 2025 is going to be a very different year for football. Like, it really is. You're actually getting to play in the interprovincial games this weekend for Ulster. You won't be worrying about the new rules because you're focusing on a county final. But, like, whatever comes true, and I know there's seven kind of core enhancements and there's a lot to probably take in, we won't know what's fully coming in for January 25, but we know there will be changes. We won't know until Special Congress in November. Have you wrapped your head around some of the new rules already? Like, I know you're only in there the last couple of days with Ulster.
Some, I suppose, like...
Is there any you're looking forward to?
I think, like, they'll not fundamentally change how the game's played. I think there'll be periods of, you know, slower play and periods of transition. Like, we would have been a team that we would have really tried to, you know, transition fast and stuff like that. So perhaps the three up might add, you know, 10 or 15% more kick passes, you know, out of defence, but to the three up. But I think, obviously, the scoring thing is exciting, of course, the two-point arc and 4 points for a goal. Like, I just felt, even just being involved at the weekend in a bit of a trial game, I suppose, that anything that adds, like, gets rewarded for more skill, then brilliant. 2 point arc and 4 for a goal. Although I felt like the goal thing was too strongly weighted, if I'm going to be honest with you. Like, 4 feels like if you can see 2 goals in a match, you're probably not going to win the match at all. Yeah. Whereas, you know what I mean? So
you kind of need it, though, when there's a 2 point goal. Like, why would you
ever
go for a goal?
I think a 3-2-1 would still...
Do you still think it works?
I think a 3-2-1 would maybe work. That's just my opinion. I think the 40-metre arc with regard to the goalie's kick-out, I think it's taken away the skill element of the game. I appreciate the old traditionalists will say, kick it out long and see who wins it. But you're taking a skill out of the game where you're trying to win primary possession from a goalie who can put the ball anywhere inside his 45 and beyond. So to take that away, to me, it just takes a bit of a skill out of the game, to be honest with you. And it just condenses the pitch where, you know, it'll be very much like Australian rules, which, like, it's a good game, but there's less of a skill involved in that game compared to Gaelic football. So to me, if you're going closer to that, yes, you're going to see more collisions, but are we there to see more collisions? I think the point of the Football Review Committee was to see more kick passes, more flair, more things. So there are rules that will do that, but I don't think the kick pass out really...
You mean the goalkeeper getting it beyond 40?
Getting it beyond 40 is going to add to it, really. Like, the tap and go, yeah, perfect. The spirit of that is great. I think there's going to be and rightly so, in terms of respect, in terms of officials around, you know, like, the sanctions for descent or things like that with the 50-metre advancement. Yeah. It's significant for it going from what it is now, perhaps. Yeah. I'm not saying that's right, but it's a serious change of culture that's needed, I suppose.
It'll probably be revolutionary, and I think that's probably gone under the radar, you know, like, because you have no choice. Like, if you're getting sanctioned like that, you're not going to get away with it. Like, so.
And even the three up, like, we played at the weekend and said maybe a forward creeps in or a defender creeps in because they forget themselves. Now, they end up being quite self-placed after a while, but, like, if the ball's in the corner and this man has no interference in play, but the linesman pulls him on going in there, it's a 30-metre free the other side. Yeah. And you're like, you know, is that really going to add to the game? Corner, like, you're conceding a score for just walking into your own half. Like, to me, I'm not sure. I think, you know, trying to get the game speeded up and all, I think everyone, like, there's times where we're turning around going, what's going on? Yeah. And we couldn't even, you can't even argue with it. You can't even say, did he or that? Do you know?
Yeah.
Because we didn't see it. Sure.
Like, some of the changes are quite drastic from what you're used to. And it takes time. And is a lot of work has gone into this. Obviously, a lot of great minds have been going through this for the year. I think probably tweaks are needed. We're only going to see it for the first time in the public this weekend. Is that enough? Those 4 games this weekend, is that enough to make those changes on the basis of next year?
And what I would say is, you're going to see, it's obviously the interprovincials, so these boys are the best players in Ireland coming in Croke Park, wide open space. You know, it's going to be a curve-free game, and boys are going to be willing to take risks. So, you know,
it's an exhibition. It's a showcase.
It's an exhibition. Yeah. But you have to also think, how's it going to act whenever there's something on the line, whenever there's competitions, whenever you're trying to restrict David Clifford or Dara Canavan or someone up top. There's elements that you have to consider.
And there'll be some difference.
Not being coached yet, so, like, there will be ways around it, and that's the exciting part of it. That's good. That's fine. But, like, you know, in a windy game down in Tralee or whatever, or up in Donegal Valley Buffet or whatever, and you're not allowed to kick inside the 40-metre arc, but there's a hurling wind for you, you're just going to kick it out long, it's just going to come straight back at you.
And Salt Hill. I was playing Galway there. Like,
but it would have been nice.
You know what I mean? To me, that takes away from it a wee bit.
But obviously, at the minute, we don't have the Mechanic Cup our yes. pre-season competitions. So we're going to be basing off it, off Croke Park, of what's going to happen in a Carefree game and saying, right, now we're going to bring it into the National League, yeah. which it feels to me like a big jump. But, yeah. you know, at the same time, I'm very open to seeing...
It's going to be going to be in your favour.
The whole rule changes are just fitting right into your barrel.
Yeah.
If it's so, I'm in support. Like, if anything benefits the game and makes it a better watch, then I'll be here for it.
But a better watch, right, would be you and, say, Tom Sullivan from Kerry, one-on-one.
Yeah.
You can go at him. He has to stop you. Like, people want to see that. That's exhilarating.
What about Aiden? Two-point merchant
coming around in the loop.
Like, that's going to be so exciting, because how many games do you actually get to look a fella in the eye and go at him? Like, not enough.
And it is
when it's so exciting to see.
I think one of the things with it, and I don't think we'll get the full answer this weekend, I hope people can maybe understand what's being proposed a bit more, because it's a lot of information at once. I think that's probably what's going to happen. They might be able to go, okay, I can kind of see what's happening here. But 2025 itself, there's going to be a continual review of what's happening, and they've kind of baked in a couple of processes where it'll go. If something isn't working, fair enough, the 40-metre arc, maybe that is an issue. We'll pull it. So really interesting. We'll keep an eye on that. A bit quicker, right?
Quick fire.
What do you hate in the defender?
A bit of nipping. Do you know what I actually hate? I don't like whenever a defender gives me a bit more space. I shouldn't have said this because we've game coming up, but we've a couple of Tom O'Sullivan marked me from a couple of yards, and you know, you're looking around going, where the hell is he?
He was in front of you.
No, he was behind me, but I couldn't feel him. I couldn't see him, so I was like, where is he?
So he can't, like, you can't push off him then.
Yeah,
is that what he's doing? Yeah, yeah.
Didn't like that.
And
that's interesting. I didn't like that either.
Did you not?
No, I'd rather fella in close,
because then you know
he's in your space then. You don't even have to look at him, you know where he is at all times.
Did you mean would you rather have him marked in front of you for a wee bit of space? Or would you,
if he marks you from the front, you need to have a relationship with the fella out the field to get it around him or over him. But if there's no one kicking it in,
you need the eye, you need to be able to see.
You need the eye. That's interesting you say that, Jessica.
What do you hate in the forwards? You've had a couple of them enviable man marking jobs with different caliber forwards, different types of forwards. You've done Murphy, you've done I can't think top of my head now, but you've had a couple of man marking jobs where you've tagged them. What do you hate seeing a forward?
Obviously, like, you know, out and out pace is hard to handle, you know, but like, just being busy, you know, just anyone who's always making you think and making you on your toes, making you stay sharp, taking your eye off where the ball is and taking you somewhere that you don't like being. So, there's wee mind games there that happen for sure. And I think the best players just keep you busy, and you know, the best players have out and out athleticism that are just hard to handle. Mm. You know what I mean, and can shoot in a half a yard of space. So that's always hard, and you're just trying to negate that as much as possible until the help comes. But it looks like help isn't going to come anymore.
That's the end of that.
But yeah, I think teams will play an extra player anyway. So you know, they said about 3v3 up there. Like, there's no, I don't see teams allowing. Maybe for a period of time,
and drop back straight away.
You know, so there's which creates more space up there, which is fair enough. But I think once it settles, it'll sort itself out, and it's exciting, you know, because to me, I think we're really well coached and we're brilliant football brains in our setup. So
do you think
there's an exciting part of it? You know what I mean?
Is it good timing for you, seeing as you've just won the All Ireland? You've mastered this set of rules, and then they're taking them from Monday, and they're changing completely.
No, absolutely not. I don't think. I think, like, you've created a way of playing, and it's evolved, and you've tweaked it, and you've had a conversation, and we'll try this, we'll tweak it to this way, and what about this? And then suddenly, like, it's a significantly different product now, really, because you're
used to changes.
Do you know what I mean? So, it's probably not ideal for us, but I think everyone's on zero now anyway. You know, everyone's back to zero, whether you've won it or not. Mm. Everyone's back to zero at the start of the year.
That's a big thing, where the next year or two, if there is an evolution of rules are coming in, and there's going to be tinkering of what's going on. It's who can play themselves the best and who can sort of innovate with the rules. Right. Could see who's going to win Sam Maguire, Ulster Championship, whatever it is.
Definitely.
Either one of you jump in on this one. The hunger for 25, and I know there's so many changes and there's still club going on. When does that kick in? Does that happen straight away? Has it happened yet? Do you have to give yourself a chance?
I think me personally, like the way I made like a my whole adult life has been in the Armagh group and trying to live like an athlete, I suppose. So you've formed habits in your adult life that are very hard to stay away from. So you don't belong, even the basic stuff, thinking about, you know, your eating patterns or whatever and not letting yourself go too much and stuff like that. So if you're asking the question of, am I thinking about it now? Yeah, of course I am, because I'm back to trying to be tight with my nutrition and my hydration and get my body moving again and in the gym or getting up and doing mobility in the morning and stuff. So if you're asking from a physical point of view, am I thinking about it? I totally am. Have I went into the nuts and bolts of maybe setting my goals for next season or chatting to the management team? Probably not, but yeah. Just let the boys have their bit of off season and then we'll enjoy our team holiday and class. You know, the conversations will probably flow from there.
You'll thrive in Miami, I'd say.
Yeah. No, I like the sun. The sun doesn't like me. That's the problem. But no, I'll enjoy it. I look forward to it. It should be a good trip. Yeah. We have a couple of things planned. I think the Dolphins are playing, the Heat are playing. So I know we have a couple of big things planned for it.
Yeah.
Miami, was it not hit by the flood, was it? Or the storm?
Miami's beneath Tampa. Tampa was hit, so Tampa's north of Miami. So it was, I think it got the worst. Miami, I think, was fine.
You're heading out in November, middle of November?
Yeah.
Lots of good days ahead of you before you even get to 2025, lads. Aidan Forker, Conor Turbitt, thanks so much for being our first guests on the Football Pod Club this off-season. It was only right to start with Armagh, you know. Paddy, James, any last words before we...
No, fair play.
The road.
Thanks for
amazing season for you. Appreciate you just coming in. I know you're hectic, but well deserved. All Ireland champions, and do enjoy Miami. That's what it's all about.
There you have it. Episode 1 of the Football Pod Club, with thanks to AIB. Conor Turbitt, Aidan Forker, we'll catch you again soon. Thanks, lads.
Cheers.
The Football Pod Club, on Off the Ball, in partnership with AIB, proud sponsors of the GAA Senior Football, Ladies Football, Hurling and Camogie All-Ireland Club Championships. Check out #thetoughest for more.